Since March 2009, the Pharmacy Podcast has been developing content monthly, weekly, and daily for the business of pharmacy. With more than 25 different podcast channels, more than 1 million downloads, and 30-plus participating pharmacists, the Pharmacy Podcast Network is the global leader in podcasting for the pharmacy professional. Find all of our podcast channels by going to pharmacypodcast.com/shows.
Pharmacy Podcast Nation, Pharmacy Podcast Network, welcome back to the Pharmacy Podcast. This is Todd Urey, founder of the Pharmacy Podcast Network, and we have about 36 different channels now. I want everyone that's listening to really understand that you can dig into content that means something to you, whether you're a senior care pharmacist or a compounding pharmacist or someone that wants to learn about marketing. We have channels at pharmacypodcast.com/shows. Also, women in pharmacy. I'd like to make a call out to women in leadership roles. We'd love to do a new series for 2020, post COVID-19 and how that's changed things. And you sharing your vision of women in leadership within the pharmacy industry. Leadership's an interesting topic. It means different things to different people, but I think that there's always a consistency of what it means to be a leader. The organization and teams that I partner with show great leadership in pharmacy and outside of pharmacy, including some of these national organizations. But today's guest, who I'm very proud to bring on the Pharmacy Podcast Network, is an international speaker. Thomas Kouopoulos is a well-known speaker as well as an author. He's been published through Bloomberg Business Week, Forbes, The Economist, and Fast Company. And the only reason I reference that is not to tout him per se, but just to show that the diversity of what Thomas brings to our listeners today is important to me because I'm going to be listening to this podcast several times. But more than that is the ability to tap into other people's experiences in order to evade a pitfall that you may be in today or headed towards, and really understanding that if we read books, if we listen to speakers, listen to podcasts, watch videos, we round out our ability to being better leaders. What does that mean? That means that patients are cared for more so. Thomas, welcome to the Pharmacy Podcast Nation.
Todd, thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to be on here with you.
Well, it's a pleasure for me to have you. I've been connected to you on LinkedIn for some time and have watched some of the content as well as some of the things that you talk about. And it's always been an interest to me because I believe in getting outside of our pigeonhole. I get my nose into pharmacy so much that sometimes I don't look up. We have to look up in order to learn from other people. I just want to give the listeners, if they don't know who you are, just some overview of yourself. And in the interim, listeners, please go to tkspeaks.com. That's T as in Thomas, K as in Kouopoulos, .com. tkspeaks.com. But Thomas, tell us about yourself.
So my journey began, Todd, early in my career with technology. I was a hardcore technology geek, and I love technology, not just for what it could, you know, bring to the world. That's sort of the highfalutin vision of technology, but I loved it for the problem solving. To me, it was something that I could really kind of sink my teeth into and solve really tough problems. Little did I know early in my career what a common theme that would be over time. My career has been spent pretty much absorbing information and then, you know, sending it back out, educating people, helping to advise, helping to provide some foundation of knowledge in topics that are sometimes inaccessible because we make them complex. And that's always been a pet peeve of mine. I think that whatever discipline you look at, whether it's healthcare, whether it's retail for that matter, it could be entertainment, anything, we tend to develop a priesthood within that industry. And we make the topic complex. We create buzzwords and alphabet soup around it. And my job really has been looking at how technology can change fundamentally our lives, our society, our businesses, and making that topic accessible, understandable, and actionable. I mean, let's do something with technology that's meaningful to us as people and to our businesses. And right now, with what's going on in the current crisis with the pandemic that's ravaged the world, I think in many ways we're seeing how incredibly impactful technology can be to our lives. What we're doing right now, the Zoom calls that we're on incessantly day in, day out. And we can joke about that. We can whine and moan about that. And we all do, I do as well. But we're so connected because we've put in place an infrastructure for society that I think enables a level of collaboration and innovation that is just unprecedented. And that is something that we need to acknowledge while we also acknowledge the pain and the suffering that we're going through. And I love to write. My latest book just came out yesterday, Reimagining Healthcare. I dove into healthcare with a vengeance. I talked to hundreds of providers and insurance companies and patients, and I was so dismayed by the state of healthcare. It was an eye-opener for me personally, and part of what I try to present in the book is that there is a way out. We can, in fact, I believe, put healthcare on the right trajectory for the next 100 years if we take advantage of this opportunity right now and get the resolve that we finally need to move healthcare along. And we don't need to get into the political diatribes. We can do this, I think, by focusing on the process of healthcare. Policy will follow. It has to. But there's a lot we can do right now. And COVID-19 has made it abundantly clear that healthcare needs help. It was horrible to see frontline workers, and we're still seeing it today, so dedicated, so committed, and yet, despite that, they couldn't even get hold of masks, personal protective equipment. Ventilators were in short supply. I mean, we finally got our acting gear, but it took so long, and so many people went through so much suffering and pain and agony as a result. So we have an obligation as a society to get this back on track, and I think technology is a big piece of it, but part of it is also just getting the resolve and the courage to go ahead and do it.
It's amazing the timing that reimagining healthcare has come out during a time where it needs to be reimagined more than ever based on the acceleration of the demand of care that's now putting on, being placed on physicians and doctors and pharmacists and nurses. And what you talk about is how personal bankruptcies and financial fallout as a way that this healthcare system set up now, and how community hospitals are not getting by, how community pharmacies are being impacted by the greed of the PBMs and their business models. So it's interesting, Tom, you always craft your publications, it seems, at the right time based on information you sourced, because I know that there are sprinkles of the Gen Z effect in reimagining healthcare and how the people that are the future of healthcare and what stage they are in within the populace and what that means to really look at what you call the six forces of shaping the future of business. You could say the six forces of shaping healthcare. And that's why I'm interested in getting done with reimagining healthcare. And to be honest, I'm not finished with I couldn't read fast enough before we scheduled your interview, but I'm very excited about it.
Well, you read it so fast, I got to correct you on one thing. Although we definitely have to re-image healthcare, the book is called Reimagining Healthcare.
We'll
be doing both. I mean, there's a new image for healthcare that I think we have to craft as well, because the brand has been hurt. And I have to applaud you on what you're doing with the Pharmacy Podcast series and the network that you created, because, I have long thought, and when I began writing the book, it was abundantly clear to me that there are people on the front lines that we interact with day in, day out, much more so than we do our PCPs or our clinicians, and those are the pharmacists. I mean, I have a 90-year-old father, and his relationship with his pharmacist is so incredibly intimate. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. I mean, they know him, they know his conditions, they understand his quirks so much better than even his PCP does. And I look at that and I ask myself, why aren't we leveraging that more? Why aren't we, reimagining a future for healthcare that incorporates those folks that truly are on the front lines day in, day out with patients, and use their knowledge, their data, their understanding of the local community? And by the way, when you talk about community hospitals, I think this is one of the fundamental pieces of the puzzle that we ignore at our peril and our risk as a society. The community hospital is very much like the community pharmacist. They understand the local public health issues. They know what's going on in their community. And nothing is more powerful. Healthcare always has been, always will be, when it's most effective, local. there are extreme situations where you have to go to the Mayo Clinic or to, you know, some place to get treatment that you can't get anywhere else. But those are so extreme. And the reality is that the vast majority of healthcare, the efficacy of it is determined locally. And pharmacists are one of the most powerful local networks we have in the healthcare system. So I applaud what you're doing, because we have to stop marginalizing the pharmacies and the pharmacy networks and look at them as an incredibly important part of delivering effective healthcare long term.
That plays right into reimagining healthcare and reimaging. Yeah.
Care. It does.
Reimagining healthcare. So part of that is the payment model, which you dig into,
right,
how that correlates with care. Now, it doesn't, in my opinion, it does not directly relate to care. If you pay $12 for a toothbrush, or you pay $124 to a toothbrush, it's a toothbrush. Now, if you have dentist backing up some of the strategies with regards to the sensitivity of your gums, now we're talking $124. I'll pay that all day long if I think I'm getting the best healthcare. So the pharmacy is now going through something we call PBM reform, where the pharmacy benefit managers at a time really made sense. They helped to keep formularies in check. They helped to balance contracting and big employer management. Now it's become a profiteering game over care because of mail order abuse and in drug adherence issues and everything that you recognize, Tom, because you're seeing your pharmacist 10 times for every one time you see your primary care provider. So with the reimagining what healthcare is going to become, a component of that is how we pay for our services that is driven by the value of the care, and not just the flat black and white cost of the care. Can you kind of dig into that a bit?
Yeah, so there's a couple of pieces to what you just said that really are important to make sure we you know, are well aware of, and that we advertise to the public so people understand what's going on in healthcare. So when I was writing the book, one of the things that was clear over and over again was that the cost of healthcare, the ultimate cost that you pay to a provider for a therapy, for a pharmaceutical, the ultimate cost does not correlate to the efficacy of the care and outcomes. And the literature is ripe with evidence on this. I talk at great length in the book over and over about this lack of correlation. It's one of what I call my 10 culprits of healthcare. Now, look, I think we've become, as a consumer society, accustomed to this notion of higher cost, higher value. What happens in healthcare is that large provider networks leverage their economies of scale by demanding higher reimbursement rates. Those higher reimbursement rates go into more faculty, facilities and equipment and what have you, but ultimately they are simply a form of leverage to escalate prices. That's nonsense. I mean, it's the only time I've ever seen an economy of scale work against the consumer. In every other case where we have economies of scale, they work in the favor of the consumer. They drive costs down. They work in favor of the consumer. Here's where it becomes really interesting when you look at the pharmacies, however. As I project out and look at where healthcare is going, a few things are absolutely immutable. One of them is that we are aging as a population. What that means is more complex conditions, more comorbidities, more things that have to be coordinated on the part of the patient. I do not see that adequately happening at the level of the PCP, because a lot of people don't have PCPs. The numbers here are also startling. 20 to 30% of people at large, and this is much higher when you break it down by category in terms of minorities, don't have a PCP at all. So who's coordinating the complexity of those issues, of those therapies, of those pharmaceuticals? And the second trajectory is that we will undoubtedly be getting more personalized with medicine. So I doubt that in 10 years, 15, certainly 20, and I might be conservative even in those estimates, that when I go to a pharmacy, I will not be getting five prescriptions. I'll be getting one prescription that is formulated for me. And the pharmacist can play a role in that as well. So I think we create these walls, these fortresses around different parts of healthcare, the PCP, the nurse, the clinician, the local clinic, the pharmacist. And we have to tear down these walls, because once you share data across those, you can become more personalized, more effective, and you can actually track how costs relate to outcomes and be smarter than how you build the infrastructure for pricing a lot of these services, which today I think is done in a very haphazard and very fragmented way.
So I want to just dig into that just one more layer, and that is, so we know that technology, and this is perfect because you have this background, and I think you've seen this coming, by the way. You've seen this coming before these young programmers have jumped into the mix and are really driving personalized medicine through pharmacogenomics, which is the design of a test that you can find out if you're metabolizing something based on your DNA, fast, slow, or you're not metabolizing at all. Yeah. So you've seen technology in its pioneer stage, but we're not in that anymore. We're now at the point where now we're utilizing everything that we've become infrastructure. We had fiber optics lay so that we could transmit higher packets of data at the speed of light. And today we're finally leveraging much of that infrastructure. And now the EHRs are transforming, and the mobile apps are transforming, and the diagnosis with an iPhone is transforming. So there's an inflection point. John Nosta was on our show several times, and he always says that we're at an inflection point, and how data is finally being able to, we've collected. Now we're leveraging and we're using the intelligence we can pull from that data. Okay, that's forward. But look at the payment model, how far behind. It's like it. I feel like it got stuck in the 60s and was reinvented in the 70s. And then it was kind of stagnant in the 80s and 90s. And now in the 2000s and where we are today, 2020, for goodness sakes, we're all trying to rush to change it to keep up. And and that, it's almost like, Tom, I want to throw you into a think tank with, you know, the most brilliant of minds and even philosophers who understand where healthcare has gone, so that you can come up with it. Maybe the people that we're looking to solve this, which we always want to scold our government, hey, solve this problem for us, you're the federal government. Maybe they need to start looking outside to organizations like your consultancy and some of the consultancy of other firms to really bring together the next age of paying for the future of healthcare.
So I couldn't agree with you more on several fronts. One is we have to step outside of this box and look at what's happening outside of healthcare proper. So I'll give you some examples here, Todd. I think the real existential threat to the healthcare system, generally speaking, are the tech companies, Google, Amazon. We've seen Amazon and Berkshire Hathaway collaborate on efforts along these lines. But all the tech companies are looking at the fact that they have enormous pools of data about individuals. And these pools of data do speak to our habits, our behaviors. In many cases, you know, our search history tells you probably more about my medical status than virtually my any other record, including my health record probably does. So we're seeing these data behemoths look at the possibility of providing services, at least to their employees, which is what Amazon is doing, that will remove, if not outright exercise the current healthcare system to do it themselves, create their own clinics, develop their own in-house pharmacies, and build an infrastructure that more cost-effectively allows them to deliver services to their employees. Once that happens, think about this. Now, once that happens, you've now not raised the bar, you've lowered the bar in terms of costs significantly, and you set a benchmark. And now I'm going to ask, well, why am I paying so much more for healthcare for my pharmaceuticals than someone who works at Amazon? You know, why are they such a great deal? Why can't we do this, U.S. government? Why can't we do this, my healthcare provider, my insurance company, if Amazon is able to do it? So I think the next series of events that you'll see here that we're tracking very closely, and that when I advise folks, right, when I talk to providers, when I talk to insurance companies, I say, look at what's going on outside. The existential threat is not some other pharmacy, it's not some other provider, it's not some other insurance company. It is completely outside of your industry. And you can learn how to, if not mimic, at least understand what they're doing to provide models that will be competitive when the time comes. Because if not, there's going to be a cliff drop. We will see a tremendous, I think, pressure exerted on the traditional healthcare system as a result of these private healthcare networks. You know, it's not unlike what happened in the 70s when we first, came up with the idea of HMOs, and that was a radical notion back then, but it was still a very disjointed notion.
Right.
you know, today we have the data by which to actually, you know, if we had the data to create HMOs back then, they would have been wonderful. We've got the data now. So in some ways, we're going back in time to what was a very good idea, but one that cannot be supported by the data. And look, at the end of the day, Todd, the biggest threat, I think, to me as a patient is this episodic care that I get. You know, if I don't have the same PCP for 30, 40 years, if I go to a different ER, to a different clinic, to a different pharmacy each time, and my data doesn't follow me, you don't know who I am. You don't know what my healthcare conditions are. You have no way to predict. And frankly, you have no vested stake in predicting the outcome, long-term outcome of my healthcare, because you won't be there to have to worry about that. But I will as a patient. So having that data follow me, which is something that the tech companies know how to do, whether it's Apple or whether it's Amazon or Google, the data will follow me. The problem is I don't own that data. They do. And this is where I think healthcare and technology collide, is that ultimately as a patient, I need to own all of that data. That should be mine, and it should follow me wherever I go, to any clinician, to any healthcare, any component of the healthcare service. That data should come with me. It's my wingman. It should always be there. Today it's not. And by the way, come back to pharmacies. You know what? If I think about who today, the candidates who today own most of my data, it's not the providers. It's either the insurance companies or the pharmacies. You know, frankly, CVS knows more about me right now than any other healthcare provider, including my insurance companies, because CVS has been there longer than my insurance companies have. I change plans every several years, but I don't change CVS. And I don't mean to make this just about the large behemoth pharmacy folks. I think they play a role. But I think, again, as I said earlier, I can't emphasize enough that the community players are so important in understanding the local issues of their marketplace as well.
The sociological impact of and the psychological impact of the changing of healthcare based on the demographic change of who's leading healthcare. The new physicians, the new pharmacists, the new nurses that are coming up, they don't think like, and I'm not poking, I'm 47 years old. Those individuals, we have to come to terms that they don't think about things the way that even you and I are closer in the way that we think, and the way that our fathers were, you know, very strict and they expected this, our mothers expected this. And it was a very, I felt like I had more of a defined channel of behavior, a defined channel of work ethic, a defined channel of what my sociological input demanded of me as a man, you know, as a coming father, my responsibilities. And I'm not saying that there's a negative to where you and I came from. I think it's an evolution of humanity in what our country is forming into, and much more driven by, you know, purpose and what that purpose is. So we have to attract physicians, and we have to attract pharmacists and nurses and caretakers to this industry. They don't want to see it blowing up and it collapsing and it not working. Like, we have to look at this from a sociological perspective. And I think of Dr. Amish Adalja, who just came on the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Dr. Adalja is a practicing physician and concentrates on epidemiology, and he's been sourced on MSNBC and CNN, and so many news networks are looking to him because he speaks from a factual science-based, he leaves politics out of it, he'll chime in on stuff. But what that doctor has done in opening my eyes is noticing that there's a difference in generations and what is coming of the leadership of healthcare, and how the way that we paid for and managed and insured our health populace and the health of the population is completely changed. And absolutely. And now, what's the time of this, Tom? Like, you see this train wreck of really, we just spoke on the technology and the care changing, and it is, and it's getting better. But now the payment organizations and the insurance organizations are all playing catch up, and we see consolidation. Aetna's being, you know, merged with a PBM, and we have other things shifting. And so what's this timetable, if you could look at this and say, here's the drop-off point, that if we don't have things kind of figured out, we're gonna be in a lot of trouble.
We've got about 10 years, the way I look at it. I mean, that's a very specific answer to what I think is a very, very important question, Todd. We've got about 10 years to figure this out. And the reason for that time frame, by the way, has something to do with what you were mentioning earlier, the sort of the demographic shift on two ends. On one end is the demographic shift in terms of the 60-plus year-olds who do have more complex conditions, more comorbidities that they'll have to deal with. And by the way, you know, we want to live longer. The price we pay for living longer is quality health care. If we don't figure that out, you know, we're going to hit a social milestone there where we simply cannot support an aging demographic. And by the way, not a U.S. problem. This is a global problem. Demographics are changing around the world. So we're moving from a population pyramid to sort of a, you know, what I call a skyscraper. The difference in the five-year age bands from 0 through 5 to 60 through 65 will be less than 2 percentage points. That's not a pyramid, right? That's a flat wall on either side. So that's number one. So generationally, that older demographic is going to require much more complexity of care that the current system does not provide. COVID-19 was a wake-up call. It was a glimpse as to what healthcare will look like in 10 to 15 years if we don't get our act together. We will have a surge, a demographic surge, what a lot of people are calling the population time bomb right now. At the other end, and I love that you brought this up, is that younger, you know, Gen Z, millennials and more so Gen Z, simply will not tolerate inefficiency. They look for purposeful interaction with anyone that they work with, whether it's a healthcare provider, you know, a pharmacist or a retail institution, doesn't make any difference. And number three, they absolutely will not tolerate a lack of digital interaction. That last one is really important because a lot of times we say, well, yeah, they were raised with digital technology, therefore that's just what they're accustomed to. It's not what I'm accustomed to as a 60-year-old. But what you miss when you characterize it that way is something really important, which is that there's a whole lot more value that we can deliver through digital interaction. So I'll give you a case in point. Just yesterday, I had an online telemedicine appointment with my dermatologist. I wanted them to look at something. I know my dermatologist. I've known her for years now. And we got online. We talked about how awkward it is to use this new channel. She mentioned how older people have a tough time with Zoom. And then we got into the real meat of the conversation. She brought images, video, all these things into the conversation that she never could have done if I was in her office. And in that moment, I said, you know what? I like this. This is so much better. I'm being educated. I feel much more empowered as a patient, as a consumer. The connection we're making right now, as meaningful as the face-to-face is, has so much more value. And Gen Z gets that. They understand that online, you can deliver a multi-channel approach that is so much richer in terms of the value that you give to the consumer. So I would challenge your pharmacists who are listening in on this podcast, what are you doing in that regard? Besides just having an online portal through which I can check my prescriptions and refill them, what are you doing online to enrich the experience that I have as a consumer? That's where the battle will be fought. Those are the trenches of healthcare tomorrow. Is the degree to which you can engage with me in that way will bring along those Gen Zers, and that's how they'll vote. They'll vote with their digital wallets, if you will. So it's fascinating because I think 10 years is pretty much the time span within which Gen Z will be in the driver's seat or very close to it. And then the rest of us will be looking at, you know, a dozen prescriptions, you know, a dozen specialists trying to coordinate all this. We won't be in a position where we want to take that on as a full-time job. We'll have other things that we want to do with our lives. And I think that will bring us to a real break point. But COVID-19, Todd, is sort of the trailer, if you will, for what that will look like if we don't get our act together.
Boy, that's very insightful, and I appreciate you saying that. I also appreciate the understanding that you see personally of the importance of leveraging the right healthcare provider to carry out therapies that the most fragile of our patient population. You know, I think of our seniors. I think of the institutionalized patient that needs constant oversight of medication management. And you recognizing that the pharmacist is really an important player, not because this is the Pharmacy Podcast, you know, network, and we focus on pharmacists, but literally the impact that makes to our $300 billion adherence issue that we're facing.
That's right. With
readmittance to hospital systems because people aren't taking their medication. And the reason why they're not taking their medication is because a myriad of reasons, but mainly they're starting to feel better. They just put off by the regimen, or they can't afford it. So it has to be, those are one of the top three reasons. So having your pharmacist plug in, I think of so many of my pharmacist friends who own pharmacies who are changing their delivery of medications. The organizations that like Spencer that has that automated system that sets on the, coffee table of the patient and at a time coordinated with the pharmacist interaction, out comes an adherence package where you have your four meds already prepackaged and all you'd have to do is rip it open and take it and press the button and let the device know that you're on to the next phase. And so there's the technology, but the human to human has to be there. That's the pharmacist. That's the assurance. And what do you say to pharmacists that are listening right now in that community, in that long-term care, or even the hospital system space, who really are looking for guidance from a leadership perspective of how to make their voice heard, but also in the trenches, how to really push and collaborate together to make sure that we do see these changes happening?
So let's take each of those separately and quickly, because I think the answers are pretty succinct here. In the first case, they've got to look outside of, to get the message out, they've got to look outside of the box. They have to look at the existential threats, the tech giants and what they're doing, and learn from that. That is the direction that ultimately is going to dictate where healthcare goes, I think, to a large degree. So first and foremost, make sure you're investing some time in your future by looking at carefully at what's going on there. A lot of what we do with our clients is helping them to understand outside of their very important but nonetheless myopic view of healthcare what the factors are. And I call them existential threats because I want people to just wake up and pay attention to them. But they don't have to be existential threats. These could be things that we learn from, like any crisis. They can bring us to terms with what we have to do to move into the future, right? And we don't ever move into the future by dragging along the past. That anchor tends to keep us where we are in the best possible case and not moving forward. In the second case, look, I think that the pharmacy has to become, and this is because of what you just said, has to become a more important player. I've been asked this, and I love it because people's eyes always kind of bulge when I say it. I've been asked, so if you could do one thing right now that was the simplest possible thing to do, but most impactful, what would it be? People expect me to talk about, the hospital, the provider system, or the PCP relationship. It's not simple to graduate more doctors. It's not simple to change hospitals. But to get people to adhere to their regimen, to their pharmaceuticals, their medicines, to get them to adhere to that would be the simplest possible thing to do at the end of the day. And yet it would be the single most impactful thing to do. Like you said, $300 billion. And I think that's a low estimate, by the way. I think at the end of the day, it's impossible to tally the true measure of economic damage that we do through non-adherence to therapies. So if there's one thing I could do, it would be that. And by the way, what you mentioned, the countertop vehicle for adhering to a prescription and a regimen is something that I do see the tech companies like the Amazons rolling out. Imagine an Alexa specifically dedicated to your pharmaceuticals that monitors and tracks whether you take them. And then, you're not going to get penalized for not taking them, but it's like gaming. It reinforces something in you that causes you to want to pay more attention to this because of its importance. So I think those are the two things that, to get out of the box, number one, and number two, look at how you can, in a human way, this is not just about technology, but in a human way, help patients to adhere to and to build a relationship that causes them to want to adhere to their prescriptions and their therapies.
I agree. I think that it's a multi-tiered need, and we all have to really play a part in supporting it, because every time you talk to an administrator in your organization, and not for you, Tom, per se, or me, but sure enough, the majority of the listeners, the majority of the pharmacists, 283,000 plus active pharmacists in the United States, and they have to rank and file at times. They have to do what's expected of them at times. And even though sometimes those big chain pharmacies that have been called to the carpet based on the Wall Street Journal's uncovering or the New York Times uncovering of some very bad practices of pharmacy. They're not the villains. They're part of this trap that we're in right now. Yeah. That should prove to us when people are not taking their meds or they're passing away or they're dying and it's making healthcare more expensive, and it shouldn't be a value of the dollar. It's the value of the individual, and that's priceless. But nonetheless, we're all grown-ups here. You know, I'm not going to sit around and be naive about this. So the responsibility of the pharmacist listening right now, you are not insulated from this. This is your problem. You pharmacy students, this is your problem. When you're listening to Tom speak, you pick up a copy of his book. If you, by the way, if any of the listeners go to LinkedIn and tag Pharmacy Podcast and share this episode, you're going to be given one copy, up to 10 copies. The first 10 that do this on LinkedIn, you're going to get a copy of Reimagining Healthcare, because this book is amazing. So what we have to do, back to the responsibility, you're listening right now, find out from the bosses, find out from your regional directors, find out from your team, find out from if you're working for an independent community pharmacist, how can I help? Like, how do I make changes in this? Because if they know you're aware of what's happening, there's going to be a level of respect. You're not hiding. You didn't just punch your card and leave for the day. Schedule some time with administration. Let them know, hey, I know what's going on. Like, I know why hours are being cut, or I know why we're hiring brand new pharmacists at some of the lowest rates possible per hour. Like, we know why this is happening. We have to change it. Like, things have to change. But we can't expect just the magic government one day to wake up and create us a new system. Tom, you and I know that's never going to happen.
Well, you know, and if it does happen, unfortunately, history is tells a different story about what that means. The implications of government meddling with this stuff are always long term and never necessarily the ones that we would want coming into it. So the more we can do on our own as an industry, as a community, I think the better off we are. Policy plays a role here. I'm not going to discount that. At some point, policy is clearly an important part of this. But policy is better when it follows social trends than I think when it attempts to create them.
Correct. I agree with you. It should support.
Exactly.
It should support the leaders out in the marketplace that have created the new model, and it should fit into it and make sense, and then ultimately come down to providing better health care. And I absolutely agree with you. Tom, this has been a pleasure. I tell you what, I know how busy you are. I want to give a shout out to Finn Partners, Gil Bashi's team and him. He's been on the show and they just do a great job. They're so personalized and they really care about being involved in really the reimagining of healthcare, literally. Like, they're involved in this too. And sometimes you feel cold when it comes to publicists or PR companies or something, and that's not the case. Finn really gets involved. So I just want to give them a shout out. But thank you so much for making the time. You have an open invitation. If there's something that comes up in the PBM market, if there's something that comes up with healthcare transformation or reform, and you want to reach out to our 70,000 plus listener pharmacist family that's listening to this podcast, please let us know and we'll make that happen.
Todd, thank you so much. The audience that you're addressing with these podcasts is so critically important to the future of healthcare. It was a real pleasure to be able to share a few ideas with them. Thank you.
Thomas Kolopoulos, Reimagining Healthcare. I said reimaging, but it's reimaging, reimagining at first, and then it reimaging. But thank you so much, Pharmacy Podcast Nation, for listening. If you need anything, please reach out to the show, pharmacypodcast.com, or give us a call, 412-585-4001. And as always, I thank you for what you do. We are your greatest fan. We thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast.